9 past 10 on Radio Live.
It's Sunday morning with Mark Sainsbury.
Is there a revolution going on in New Zealand politics? And if so, is it being generated by a small group of bloggers and lobbyists? And has it all gone to hell in a handcart? Yeah, we were going to be talking about television this week, the future of television, but we're talking about the future of some of our political big figures. And we've got the big players in to talk about it this morning. Former National Party President Michelle Bogue, former Labour Party President Mike Williams. Matthew Hooton is going to join us later on in the hour. In fact, I was just looking at his company, Exceltium Corporate and Public Affairs, and says they are deeply rooted in Wellington's political establishment. I think deeply rooted is a phrase that's been used quite a bit lately around some of the parties. Michelle?
They could well be.
Everyone keeps talking about whether this is a game changer, and we had various calls, you know, during the last couple of hours, and a lot of people saying, sick of this stuff. Has this changed the election?
Oh, no doubt. You can't get rid of a minister 3 weeks before an election, and it not change the fabric of the landscape. But I think what we're seeing here is a group of fantasists who operate in a little world of their own, thinking that the world revolves around them. And, of course, when you look at the sort of stuff they've apparently been up to, they have been spectacularly unsuccessful. Whatever money was paid to Whale Oil and Kathy Hodges was a complete waste of money, because even the State Services Commissioner has come out this morning and said Judith Collins was nothing but positive about Adam Feely. So whatever money they've been paid has been wasted. They are not people, in my view, to use a phrase that Matthew's got on his website, that are rooted in the real world.
Look, we've also got on the line Duncan Garner, Radio Live's Drive, former TV3 political editor. Duncan, this is the game changer. You've been saying, I know, on your show for weeks, something's going to happen, it's all going to get worse, and a lot of people were poo-pooing that. What happened yesterday changed everything?
No, it certainly has, and I just want to comment on Michelle's views. I think she's absolutely right. I mean, these guys are dreamers. I mean, they're fantasists, and they've been sort of operating in their own world and in their own bubble, thinking they have this influence. And the biggest influence they've had is the downfall of Judith Collins. I mean, the irony is, and I think in the World Cup soccer, you'd call this a spectacular own goal. I mean, that's what's happened here. And Johnkey wakes up every morning now, as he has done for the last couple of weeks since this whole hacking business has gone on, and he can't control the campaign. He doesn't know what's going to happen today. My understanding of it, just read something just before, there's going to be more documents released today. What happens on Monday? What happens on Tuesday? I mean, this campaign has completely turned on its head, and you can say, where's the policy? Let's talk policy. The Prime Minister, the Labour Party, and all the other parties have completely lost control of this campaign to an anonymous blogger who's now dumping stuff around. And that's why he had to get rid of Collins, because he needed to remove the target for the next 20 days. There's still 20 days to go, which is a lifetime in politics. So you need to remove the target. My question is, who came to the Prime Minister with this information? When? Who set this whole thing up? There's so many questions behind the scenes about how this was created.
Mike Williams, is it going to cut through? As much as we're all obsessed by this and we relish every detail and the whole politics of it all, is it going to change the voters' minds?
It will change some of their minds. And could I comment? I agree these guys are fantasists. I was a victim of Slater. He published an utter fantasy about me, which I could demonstrate was a fantasy. But however, these were fantasists who were connected to the Prime Minister's office via Jason Eid, to the Prime Minister via calls to Cameron Slater, and to Judith Collins. So they were believing the fantasy. Now, let's step step back and have a look. Number one, this situation, as Michelle pointed out, of a minister resigning 3 weeks out from an election is utterly unprecedented. We simply don't know what the impact of that would do. The second thing that is likely to change the vote is that deep divisions within the National Party are revealed.
Well, now, I wouldn't call it a deep division.
Michelle, I must comment on the smile on your face when you came in this morning. You were not particularly fond of Judith Collins.
Well, I'm even less fond of Cameron Slater, and this is the whole thing. This is the point that's very important. Cameron Slater is not the National Party. I know the National Party. The National Party are thousands of workers who would have been out there this weekend delivering pamphlets, repairing billboards, knocking on doors, going to meetings to support their MPs, and they are the National Party, not Cameron Slater.
Is this some sort of Tea Party analogy? Hardly. But in terms of having a right-wing rump of the party, you're trying to get more influence than they actually have got.
Look, this isn't... I wouldn't call them a right-wing rump. I'd call them a little coterie of fantasists who, for some reason...
Which includes the Minister of Justice.
And the Prime Minister.
And Wayne Eagleson, who you appointed to be Chief of Staff, Michelle.
I didn't appoint you.
You had the contract, Michelle, to do the HR for the National Party.
No, I didn't.
You are an apologist for the National Party.
Matthew, I have never had a contract from the National Party for
anything.
I did not appoint Wayne
Eagleson. Well, you're not
Eagleson.
Telling the truth about that.
No, Matthew, that is defamatory.
I'm telling you, you are not telling the truth.
That is defamatory. You can defend yourself
if you wish, but I know for a fact, and you know for a fact, that you provided advice to the leader of the opposition to appoint Wayne Eagleson and appoint those senior staff.
Let me tell you what happened.
When you were an HR consultant.
Let me tell you what. You are a hack.
Hang on, I'm
You have supported the National Party. You have no political views, Michelle. You have supported the National Party through the times of Muldoon, the times of Richardson, the times of Bulger. And what you are all about is defending a government that has behaved in ways which is literally indefensible, and you know it.
Hang on, why is it suddenly turned on Michelle, Matthew?
Yeah.
Because Michelle comes in here and tries to say that it's just a small group of people, that Cameron Slater is just acting as rogue, which is all true. It is not true. They were acting under orders from the most senior people in the Prime Minister's office, and you know it.
Well, can I just say here that Matthew, for some reason, seems to have gone completely off planet sanity, that I can tell you quite honestly that when Don Brash was considering appointing Wayne Eagleson, he rang me, not as an HR consultant, but as a person he knew and trusted, and I was able to tell him that, yes, Wayne Eagleson was one of the people that was appointed at DB after I
by
left.
By you?
No, not by me, because
on your recommendation.
It was Nicola Wright, actually, who brought Wayne Eagleson in, and she was there after
Michelle,
me.
Michelle, you are at the heart of all this.
Wayne Eagleson, for those who may not know,
you are at the heart of all this.
For some reason, this has become my fault. Sounds to me, Matthew, like you are engaging in the Cameron Slater school of character assassination. I can assure you, you are absolutely right. I have supported the National Party loyally for 40 years, and you've been a flibbertigibbet all over the place. That's entirely your right.
No, I've never changed.
I am proud of supporting the National Party for 40 years, and yes, I've worked for several of their leaders, and yes, I'm loyal to them today, just as loyal as I was 40 years ago. But this shouldn't be a personal attack on me.
And you are coming in here and you are pretending...
I'm not pretending anything. You are pretending
that this is nothing to see here. You're spinning the Prime Minister's lines, which are literally preposterous.
I have never had a conversation with the Prime Minister about this issue. Never. And the Prime Minister doesn't ring me and give me orders. I am my own person. I represent the hundreds of thousands of National Party supporters who over many years have supported the way, the direction that we think is right for New Zealand. And Matthew can have his little hissy fit, but I can assure you the things that he has said.
Well, I wish you'd
speak
more
respectfully.
Because I'm not having a hissy fit. We have got evidence here that the Prime Minister's office interfered in the political neutrality of the Prime Minister's office, of the secret intelligence service
of this
country.
Matthew, what are you on? What are you on? Because you're extremely irrational quite now.
We don't have evidence that the Prime Minister's office interfered with the security intelligence. No, no, you don't like it because I am finally calling time on these people. I support this government. I support
low taxes. You'd never think so.
I support changes to the benefit system.
Are you doing this to deflect?
I support police. What I don't support is political operatives appointed on your recommendation, Michelle.
Jason,
interfering.
It's got nothing to do with me.
I'm talking about Wayne Eagleston.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, I got a Jason, phone call.
Is Jason Eade the guy that deals with the SIS instead of the Prime Minister?
I have no idea.
Why aren't you asking those questions
Matthew,
instead of defending the indefensible?
This isn't about me, Matthew. You have come in here, I think, to try and protect your friend Cameron Slater. I think all you're trying to do is deflect attention away from
Cameron. Cameron Slater's a guy that's threatened to burn my house down in the past.
Well, he's done worse than that to me.
Let's all just take a quick breath. Duncan Garner has to go. I just want to get a quick word from him. We're going to go to a break and we're going to carry on this spirited conversation. Duncan.
I'm quite keen just to carry on, Mark. This is the disintegration of the factions of the National Party in front of us. I'm enjoying this.
It's
great sport.
Well, it's funny because we're just talking to Michelle about where there's factions on the National Party, and here we have two people who both have been closely aligned to the party and one going the other by the throat.
Mm. I think, to be fair, you know, Matthew is annoyed that I'm in the same game as him. I'm in the PR game. He's attacking me, using this to engage in character assassination. And you've got to remember that we are competitors in the PR game, and that may
that
well
is
be
completely
behind.
Completely ridiculous.
Just Matthew, hang on a sec, Duncan. I know you have to get going. How's this going to play out, Duncan?
The issue for me, what I was quite keen to speak about this morning was, how did this come into the hands of the ninth floor? When did they know about it? Who passed it to the ninth floor?
So who leaked it to the ninth floor?
When did he first know it? That's right. And you know, is this some kind of internal setup to get rid of Collins, to take her out of the mix for the next 3 weeks? Because, as we all agree, I think that there are going to be more documents, and you know, the PM's lost control of this campaign, so they're trying to take Collins out of the mix. There are so many questions. Who was paying who in terms of the bloggers? Was it Hotchin? Was it Mark Hotchin? What is Cactus Kate's involvement? This is really murky, really grey, and I think we need the highest level of inquiry we can into it.
Well, in the meantime, we're going to inquire into that just after break. Duncan Garner, hey, thanks for joining us. Talk to you next week. We're going to go to a break now and back with our panel. Michelle Bogue, Mike Williams, and, of course, a very angry this morning about all of this, Matthew.
Not at all.
All right, we'll be back after this break.
Are you an innovator? This is Auckland's Radio Live, 100.6 FM. It's Sunday morning with Mark Sainsbury.
Well, if we're wondering about what the public thought, if there's any heat in this debate out there, there's certainly plenty of heat in the studio this morning with our panel discussing this. Matthew Hooton has just joined us, Michelle Bogue and Mike Williams, of course, been here right from the start. And I must say, it is beginning quite fiery. Let's go back to what we had a resignation yesterday. Judith Collins was stepped down. Does this reflect badly on John Key that he left it so long, Michelle?
I think the point that the Prime Minister made yesterday was that he deals in facts, and this was a particularly serious issue. There has been a lot of innuendo around this issue. And he said that this particular allegation was very, very serious, and he felt that it was the one that required him to act. And, you know, people can come up with all sorts of theories about how this happened and why this happened, but I'm quite happy to accept his position. I don't know why people have to try and find some other reasoning for it. He said, this was a serious issue. It is appropriate for me to act.
Matthew Hooton, who leaked the email to John Key's office, which effectively was the smoking gun?
One of the people named in the email is my understanding. I think Michelle is absolutely right. This is very, very serious. It is, and the Prime Minister had no option to sack the Justice Minister. I think that one of the good things about what happened yesterday is we've got our Prime Minister back after his absolutely ill-judged, incompetent and almost probably dishonest behaviour since the book came out.
So we've finally
got our Prime Minister back, and hopefully he can go on to win the election.
Well, hang on. If you're saying he was acting dishonestly, that suggests he is not fit to be Prime Minister.
Well, his stories about why these SIS papers were released and how that happened are literally impossible to believe.
I don't think they're impossible to believe at all.
Well, you have no idea then about how SIS and government OIA applications work, and Mark probably does.
I know what the theory is, Matthew.
What's the theory?
But I know what your theory is, but you know, there are conspiracy theorists on the left and there are conspiracy theorists on the right, and you're one of those.
Okay, should we just talk about Warren Tucker?
Yep.
Warren Tucker.
This isn't about Warren Tucker.
So you believe Warren Tucker was used by the Prime Minister?
Well, here's what you have to believe that the Prime Minister's account is serious. And I had a good discussion with Sean on this. Warren Tucker was born in 1950. He joined the New Zealand Army. He rose to the level of Major. He then did a PhD in engineering at Canterbury University. He was appointed to senior intelligence roles by Sir Robert Muldoon, the National Prime Minister. He was entrusted by the Prime Minister David Lange to represent New Zealand at the National Security Agency in Washington.
Are you doing PR for him now?
He was appointed.
Doing very well.
Absolutely. Better than Cameron Slater would.
Good idea to shut it up because it gets worse. He then gets appointed by Sir Geoffrey Palmer into the GCSB to become New Zealand's top chief of intelligence. Bolger appoints him to head up a very senior secret organisation. Helen Clark appoints him to head the SIS.
So he's got cred.
John Key appoints him to remain at the SIS. And we are to believe, if John Key and Michelle Bogue's accounts are true, which they aren't, that all of a sudden on the 26th of July 2001, Warren Tucker, after a career like that, decides to break the law. Decides just to ignore Section 4AA of the Security Intelligence Act, which requires him to act politically neutral. He decides to ignore Section 4 of the SIS Act, which requires him to act only within the functions to protect the security of New Zealand. Now, it's just not possible that unless... And if John Key's and Michelle's story is true...
It's not my story, Matthew.
You've defended the story. John Key should call the police and get someone to investigate Warren Tucker.
Mike Williams, is the most damaging aspect of this whole thing, of all the things that come out, as Matthew says, the SIS request and whether it was an abuse of power there, or the latest tranche of bringing up Hotchin and perhaps attempts to interfere with the serious fraud office or the chief executive?
Well, it's cumulative. Look, I am not sure. Michelle said... John Key had to act on facts. I don't believe there are any facts in this latest email. Now, Judith Collins said this never happened. State Services Commissioner said she behaved properly. I don't think the email was the cause of the sacking. I think it was an excuse for an accumulation. I think the Judith Collins' behaviour was over Simon Pleasant's was much worse than this. Allegation, which has not been proven, and the Simon Pleasant's one, of course, she admitted to, it was proven. I think John Key's been looking at the polls. I think their overnight polling is showing that there is strong support for getting rid of Judith Collins and that they are dipping badly. Now, I think that this involvement of Hanover is likely to have resonance. 18,000 people lost their life savings in Hanover, and you've got an allegation that Judith Collins is involved in trying to undermine the prosecution of these people, which never got to court.
Okay. So, this is where the logic of what Mike is saying falls down, because Judith Collins is saying that I did not do that.
In that case, the Prime Minister shouldn't have fired her.
Well, he didn't fire her. She resigned because she wants her name.
She had no choice. I mean, they always say this, you know, yes, she resigned. Can I ask you this, Michelle? Do you think there was enough in the previous allegations over the Simon Pleasants and all that sort of stuff, was there enough there to justify John Key standing her down beforehand?
I don't think there was, Michelle, but hang on, let me finish, Mike.
You conceded that point on Sean Plunkett's program, you can't change your mind.
No, what I'm saying and what I said on Sean Plunkett's program was that any other minister would have resigned in the interests of the party.
And any other Prime Minister would have sacked the Minister for it.
OK, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with you right after this.
Are you an innovator? Mark Sainsbury.
And you are, we're here with our panel this morning, and things are getting fairly lively. We have Mike Williams, former Labour Party President, Michelle Bogue, former National Party President, and, of course, Matthew Hooton, who is a PR consultant, lobbyist, columnist. Now, Matthew, one of the big things, we had a few emails in saying, look, it's going to be hard to believe stories now because I don't know where the spin's coming from, whose agenda. You have been linked with Slater. What is that relationship?
Slater and I have had an off-and-on relationship. I first met him some years ago, I think through David Farrer. He's had periods of time where he's hated me and said that he's collecting dirt files on me. He's had periods of time when he said he's going to come around and burn my house down. And he's had periods of time where he's been quite friendly. He's kind of a guy I talk to on the phone from time to time and have that type of relationship with.
Are you damaged goods by association with him?
No, I don't think so. Lots of people have had, including the Prime Minister, talks to him. So the Prime Minister also finds it useful to talk to Cameron Slater from time to time. I think that, and so do people in the Labour Party, and lots of people talk to him.
Including Mike Williams, the media, you see in a lot of those emails, a lot of the media were willing to play ball or get information from Whale Oil.
Yeah, well, I think that's natural. Media is always looking for a story, and, I mean, he has provided, through the leaks, a torrent of stories over the last 2 weeks. I wouldn't touch him with a barge pole myself. I find him totally reprehensible. His language is completely foreign to me, but, you know, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
The other big question is where are the leaks coming from, the Whale Dump, who's behind the leaks to Nikki Hager? But then we see this latest leak, the PM's office. John Key said he found out on Friday. There's been other suggestions, Matthew, that this was certainly talk of this was floating around at least a couple of days earlier.
And Wednesday.
It may, in fact, explain John Key's very poor performance on the debate with David Cunliffe. He looked distracted. But look, it seems to me there's now probably this is phase two. And this is what happened in Watergate, where the thieves fall apart and they start every man for himself. And this seems to me to be some of the people involved in this are trying to save their skins. So it could get very much worse. But the whole thing runs back to the Prime Minister's office. Matthew's quite right. And Jason Eade. Now, I watched Watergate, the Watergate movie, and this is Watergate on steroids. It's the same thing, but it's going twice as fast, and we know what the result of that was.
I've got to agree with Michelle. It's not quite Watergate, but it has similarities in the fact that there were people who were doing things which they shouldn't be doing and have been largely caught, and the question is who knew and when and all that.
And look,
sort of
all this business about, well, the Prime Minister must have known early because Matthew Hooton said he heard on somebody from somebody on Wednesday.
No, did you want to know what that story is?
Other people.
Oh, okay.
I heard you say this morning on Q&A that somebody had told you on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So other journalists, etc., jumped to the conclusion, therefore the Prime Minister must have known earlier. But we know that Wayne Eagleson was given this information on Friday morning. There is no reason to think that they knew about it before then.
No, I accept that's
true. PM didn't get it till Friday night. So people can come up with all their theories and say the Prime Minister knew earlier, but it's absolutely correct that Wayne got it on Friday and he gave it to the PM and talked to him at the earliest opportunity.
Mike, is there a practice of trying to insulate? So John Key's office, if they get hold of stuff, think, right, well, let's insulate the Prime Minister from this until it was absolutely necessary, which then gives them deniability.
I think that could have happened, but I think that there is credibility added to the John Key knew about it earlier by his very poor performance on the debate.
I thought
it was totally out of character.
Oh, it wasn't.
He was distracted.
Oh.
But look, I think in the final analysis,
history,
all roads lead back to Key's office. It was Jason Eade who was involved in this. He sat two doors away from John Key. He was in an operation. This dirty tricks operation was running for some years. If John Key didn't know about it, he's incompetent. If he did know about it, he's a criminal.
Look, there's this assumption that the PM knows about everything that's happening in his office. And Matthew made the point this morning, there are 40 people in his office. John Key is focused on doing his job, and a lot of that job is out and about, and he relies on his advisers to tell him stuff that's important.
Yeah, but if someone gets some information which points to, which you know, which it could be political dynamite, you presume they get it to the top man.
Okay, look, and listen, Michelle, you've been an HR consultant. You've said, and I'll take your word for it, that the stuff you did for Don Brash
was completely
pro bono, and you just gave some help.
I answered a phone call, just the way you do when people ring you.
Right, so let's accept that. But you've worked in HR, you know about HR. The person, what leaders do, because of course leaders don't know what goes on in the organisation. The chief executive of Radio Live doesn't, you know everything that happens in this organisation. What they do is they set the tone, the atmosphere and the culture of the organisation they lead. So it's just like H.R. Haldeman, who was chief of staff to Richard Nixon. It's not, he didn't know anything about Watergate.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. He didn't know in advance. What happened is he knew about the cover-up, but he had created the environment where people felt that that was okay type of behaviour. So in the end, I feel sorry for Jason Eade. I mean, I've never got on with him, but he is just a guy that lives in Wellington with his wife, partner and kids, and just does what his boss wants him to do. And, you know, they haven't fired him. They can't fire him, because if they fired him, he would then say, well, hang on, you knew what I was doing.
So what is it that
Wayne Eagleson's done to upset you you're gunning for Wayne?
I think we should pursue that. Why doesn't John Key fire Jason Eade?
I'd rather have the answer to my question. Why is Matthew attacking Wayne Eagleson?
Because he's the chief of staff to the Prime Minister.
No, but what's he done to upset you?
To me personally?
Yes.
Oh, his office tried to have me fired from the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Authority.
So is this personal then, Matthew?
No. It's what it is.
Sounds it.
What it is it's quite... Well, it didn't work, did it? It's quite corrupt, because what happened was...
that's a very serious allegation.
Yes, it is corrupt.
It sounds like you're in the same club as Slater.
If you would let me finish, I'll explain the context for the comment. Basically, I got a job with the Canterbury Earthquake... This is only one of many I know of. Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Authority, I get this job through a normal government procurement process. The Prime Minister's office finds out about it, rings the head of the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Authority, abuses them, says I'm to be removed from the building the same day... And Jerry Brownlee has to reminded the Prime Minister, and this is good of him, of the State Sector Act. And in fact, it's not the role of political operatives in the Prime Minister's office to have people fired because they don't like them. Similarly, I've got a large private sector client who was told that if they kept working with me and not with Mark Unsworth, who's a friend of Wayne Eagleson's, then... that company would have no access to the Beehive.
But Matthew,
the client was very loyal to me. They still pay me to this day.
You know what this sounds like? It sounds like, and you could well, and you no, could no, no, well no, no, genuinely no. agree, but this sounds like Utu on your
well, no, exactly. no, 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 there's a sense that these are only the little things I know about. They're illegal.
Hang on.
They're illegal, and then the things I know about.
If this is true... this is yet another scandal and corruption at the very highest level.
I love that word, if. You know, I love the way people...
Jerry Brownlee,
it's always,
then.
If this is the case, if this has happened, then that would be
semantic
terrible.
Semantic nonsense.
No, it's not.
Michelle, is say, I think everyone's a left-wing conspiracy theorist and none of this is true.
But there is a mere fact, Michelle. Here we are, 3 weeks out from the election, and things like corrupt and dishonest and lying and all the stuff is being thrown around. I mean, irrespective of how it's come up, it's there and it's clinging to the campaign.
Here's another one. Do you want to know another one?
There was
a large transport contract, obviously not in my league that I'm aware of. It was about below 100 million, but well above 50 million. And there was a contract for the government for this company to do the contract project. And they get these calls from the Beehive, saying, "Oh, we need you to do it this way," and this company says, "But that's not in the contract." And they say, "Yeah, but we want it done this way instead." And this company is saying, "But you can't do that." And they say, "Well, we're telling you to." So they did.
Matthew, you know, you come up with these allegations. You say the Beehive. You know, you've got to be more specific.
That was Stephen Joyce.
If you're really going to be making these sorts of comments, and I'm afraid Mark's right that this is sounding like you are personally offended.
I am.
There are people out there who don't like you, and you're taking pull the house down around you approach.
Oh, will you say that? Let's keep that offence in check. We've got to take one more break and pay the bills, and we'll be back with our panel, Michelle Bogue, Mike Williams and Matthew Whitten.
What will you be doing at 6 o'clock?
Okay. Let's get back into this. Matthew Hooton, you were saying before, you keep pointing to all these terrible dealings going on in the PM's office. Mm. If the latest whale dump, when it comes out today, this is expected to be what, Facebook conversations between Slater and Collins?
Yeah, I hear that, and I also hear it could be Slater and Ede, I don't know.
But if it's Slater and Collins, and if it's over the Feely business, this could end up with charges, couldn't it, Michelle? We could be talking about, if what is being suggested is right, we're looking at possibly criminal charges.
Look, I have no idea because I don't know what's in this material. I'm not prepared to speculate. All we do know is that whatever Slater and Odgers and Carrot Graham and all these people were doing, they failed.
I think there's more than that, Mark. I think that the Prime Minister, as a concession to Judith Collins, agreed to an inquiry. Now, this is going to have legs of its own. Now, we don't know what sort of inquiry it is, but presumably people like Kathy Odgers, Cameron Slater, Jason Ede will actually be called into this and to, make statements under oath. This could go on and on and on, and this could be end up very embarrassing because the people who've said nothing up to now, like Wayne Eggleston, who I've met once in my life, and Jason Ede, who I've never met, are going to have to emerge from the shadows. So this could be high political entertainment for a long period, and it could do nothing but damage to the John Key government.
I think it's quite... in some ways, I mean, the Prime Minister can have an inquiry if he likes, a Prime Ministerial inquiry.
Well, he says he's going to.
He says he's going to. That's absolutely fine. That's his prerogative. Probably the State Service Commission will choose to do the same. But I think really the person who needs to look at this carefully is the Police Commissioner, Mike Bush, because on the face of it, Section 116 of the Crimes Act is in question.
What does that say? Remind us.
That just says, it's called conspiring to defeat justice, and it says everyone is liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 7 years who conspires to construct, prevent, pervert, or defeat the course of justice in New Zealand. Now, you know, we haven't yet, but it's leading that way. And I think probably Mr. Police Commissioner Bush should probably speak to the Speaker and get permission for some of his officers to go in and look at the computers in the beehive to
but
see
to carry that
what's
through,
been
Matthew,
going on.
Because if you're right, and if you're saying, look, there was corrupt stuff going on in the Prime... This is your allegation, there was corrupt stuff going on in the office of the Prime Minister.
A corrupt culture, yeah.
A corrupt culture. Then could you not then end up with the Prime Minister facing charges if he was abetting illegal activity within his own office?
No, because I think that the Prime Minister chose... You know, didn't know about this. I mean,
you think he's got clean hands?
Well,
in this, do you?
Yes, I do. The sad thing is about all this is we've got an economy which is growing strongly and very, very strongly
in places.
We've got in overall it is growing very strongly. We've got unemployment that's falling. We've got wages that are rising. We've got inflation that's low. We've got interest rates that are still lower than at any time under Helen Clark. Bill English has done a fantastic job of fixing the economy through the global financial crisis and the Christchurch earthquakes without doing the type of harsh measures that would have harmed social cohesion. And this government on those terms deserves absolutely to be re-elected. But because of these issues emerging and because the Prime Minister has handled them so incompetently and chosen not even to inquire properly into them until yesterday, he's lost 2 weeks of this campaign and things, I think, are just going to get worse for him.
So
it's a disaster for New Zealand because the prospect of a Cunliffe, Norman, Toure, Peters, Minto, Sykes, I mean, it's just horrifying. So don't get me wrong. I know where I stand politically. I am national. I am right wing. But I don't approve of governments, left or right, acting in ways to politicise the spy agencies in New Zealand.
So you will actually vote for a corrupt government. Is that what you're saying?
I'll vote for John Key any time over the Cunliffe,
although you think that's
Toure.
Corrupt.
I think there are aspects in it. I'm pleased the first person has been fired, and I think if the Prime Minister has more time to reflect and inquire into things, then he will sack some more people and he will demonstrate he is running a clean government.
So it's his fault. So it's not Michelle's fault, the whole thing.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll let Michelle off. The thing is, it is his management of it has been just appalling.
Michelle,
until yesterday.
Michelle, you look at that debate, which now seems an age ago. You watched that debate. He was off his game. Whether he knew about this or not, he looked off his game in that debate.
No, I didn't think he looked off his game. I thought, and I said this before, it was inevitable that all Cunliffe had to do was do a little bit and he would be regarded as the winner because expectations of him were so low and expectations of the PM were so high. And I think what surprised the PM was the aggression of David Cunliffe talking over him the entire time. And I think that Mike Hosking didn't want to be seen to be favouring the PM, so he let it happen.
Well, look, I mean, I've hosted a few of those debates over the year. And I was
very
surprised.
Well, you did too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I was very surprised. I mean, just the body language, that hand in the... But I just, look, I've seen John Key perform. And he was not performing as he could in that debate.
No, he's hopeless in that debate. Absolutely hopeless, unfortunately. Michelle would probably tell us that Bill English beat Helen Clark in the debates in 2002 because that's just the line Michelle takes on everything. But here's the thing. It is not unusual for incumbents to do badly in the first debate. Barack Obama, I think the greatest orator and politician in the world, was absolutely smashed by Mitt Romney from the Republican Party in 2012 in the first debate. And he came back and he won that second debate decisively. Now, Cunliffe took the debate more seriously than Key. I don't know what practice John Key did, but David Cunliffe got in Michael Cullen and they spent a lot of time practicing. And Cullen and Cunliffe actually don't get on, so there was tension between them. Cunliffe is a bit intimidated by Cullen because he was the finance minister. Cullen's a brilliant debater and had watched John Key for many years. So Cullen played Key and Cunliffe played Cunliffe and they had these mock debates. And I just don't think the Prime Minister's office took things seriously enough.
Okay, come next week, Mike, can the campaign just move on? I mean, this is still going to dominate all the way through, isn't
it? Well, I was actually hoping that was happening after the last flurry, and we had the debate. It was a good debate. I think David Cunliffe did very well. He managed to get the Labor Party policies out. He stayed on message. And then we have this, and the whole thing's derailed again. And it's not only National that's been derailed, it's everybody else. And I hope we can get back on message because I think that the National Party's pitch is weak. I think David Cunliffe had some good lines, you know, the rock star economy is over and done with. But, you know, if this carries on, and we're right now what we're talking about is a dump that we don't know about, which is going to happen tomorrow. It's tragic.
Now, the other thing, Michelle, which is apparent just from the conversation we're having sitting in this studio between you and Matthew, that there are different sides within the National Party who have vastly different views and philosophies.
Oh, no, they're not different at all. It's just that Matthew has a bit of internal and personal anger to work through, and that's fine. But as I said before, this election is actually about the thousands of National Party people out there and the thousands of New Zealanders that just want their country going in the right direction. And those are the people who make up the National Parties. It's not the Cameron Slaters, it's not the Carrick Grahams, it's not even the Matthew Hootons.
Are you and Michelle on the same team, Matthew?
I assume that Michelle and I believe in lower taxes, tough welfare. I assume we're both against the apparatus of Stephen Joyce's welfare state. I think we believe in the alliance with the United States. I think we believe in strong police force, strong law and order. I think Michelle and I agree on all those things. I think those are the basic things that brings the National Party together. That's why I will always be National. I will always vote National, except I'll be voting for David Seymour from ACT and Epsom.
Good on you. We agree on that too.
But the Prime Minister, and he began this process yesterday, has to cut the rot out of his government. And he started, and let's hope he continues over the next few days and gets the campaign back on track.
It's not a good start to a campaign having to cut the rot out, though, is it, right?
No, and you can't have National Party operatives like Matt who is loyal to the National Party, accusing them of corruption. But there
not
is
not the party.
There is
not
rot.
The party.
There is rot in the National Party, and if that rot can be detected right up to the Prime Minister's office, then the Prime Minister and the National Party are in serious difficulty.
Okay, quick prediction from each of you before we go. Where's this going to go next week, Matthew?
I think it'll continue after, if these dumps happen on the internet, I think this will continue and we'll continue to talk about this rather than the fantastic economic and education story, which is deeply unfortunate. But I think the Prime Minister could probably bring an end to it all if he acts decisively, sacks some more people the way he did yesterday.
Mike Williams?
Yes, I think that Matt's right. I think the Prime Minister's made a good start, but there's a long way to go. I think there's going to come stuff come out which implicates people very close to him, if not him himself. But I think he's got to do something quick.
And Michelle, very quickly?
Inevitably, and I think this was always going to happen, but it's exacerbated, the winners out of this will be the minor third parties, not the Greens and Labour, the minor third parties.
Hey, it's thanks quite to, funny thanks, seeing Labour fall to 20%.
Thanks to all my panellists. Thanks also to Levon Budge on the desk today and Mary Putnam, who makes it all happen. We'll be back again next week here on Sundays on Radio Live.